So right now it is 2:30 p.m. on the 17th of January 2011. This is Bridget Brownlow, and I'm conducting an interview with Eileen Murphy in regard to her work at the Mount and any connection with St. Mary's and the thesis I'm working on. So thank you very much. Pick us up, okay? These high tech. I know. It's amazing. When I looked at it, I thought, there's no tape. But there's no tape. It's all digital. So maybe I could start to ask you if you could state your full name.
All right.
Your record, please.
It's Aline Travis Murphy.
Great. And your date and place of birth?
St. John New Brunswick.
Great. And can you describe your educational background?
I have a Bachelor of Science degree from St. Francis Xavier,
Right.
a Master's of Science degree from the University of Montreal.
Excellent.
I have a professional dietetics registration for Canada. I'm an honorary member of the Dietetic Profession of Canada. And I'm a professor emeritus at Mount St. Vincent University.
That's very impressive. Very impressive background. And so what?
And oh, I should say, I
Yes.
have a doctorate in human letters
Oh.
too.
It's a small piece of me.
Yeah.
A doctorate in human letters.
Yes.
And what does exactly does that mean?
Actually, it's an honorary
Yes.
degree from the Mount.
Right.
In recognition for contribution to the university and to the two professions that I worked in, the Canadian Home Economics Association,
Okay.
where I was Vice President for International Development and oversaw our projects in the Middle East, Africa, and South America.
Wow.
And in the dietetic profession, I've been responsible for the professional standards, which includes the education of dietitians, the internship programs, continuing education, and
Yes.
now recently, I've forgotten what we call it, the special status for those who have done particular research fellowships,
Fellowships, okay.
fellowships in the association. So that
Fascinating.
was my contribution, those things to those professions. So
Right.
that's where the honorary degree
Well
comes from.
deserved. Well deserved. And when did you receive that degree?
1997,
Oh, okay.
I
Well, so not that long ago.
think.
No, that's
Yeah. No.
great. And so could you help me understand your first associations with the Mount?
I came to the Mount in 1951. Let me think. Yeah, 51, September 1951, and I was responsible for the. My background is in nutritional sciences and food science, so I was in the program for nutritionists and dietitians, the
Okay.
people in that program. And I left in 1956 when I was married.
Okay.
I went back in 1966
10 years later.
and was in when I went in 1951, I was the first and the only full-time lay professor at the university.
Wow, what a pioneer. I mean, you've been a pioneer in many other respects, I know from your educational background and whatnot, but to be the first lay
Yeah.
person is. Now, help me understand, please, what was that like?
Well, it was pleasant. I mean,
That's.
the Canadian Dietetic Association regulates the profession, like the Medical Association and
Yes.
so forth. And they regulate not only they look examine our course content, that the students go through in their 4 years. They also have requirements for the faculty.
Right.
They want to know that they require certain backgrounds in the faculty.
Mm-hmm.
So the university was embarking on in a new building. Everestus had just opened that
right.
fall, and they were rebuilding their accreditation with the Didactic Association.
Okay.
They had always been accredited, but you know, you're accredited over and over again every 5 years. So
right.
they were looking to, they built a new, beautiful new department. They were looking to you know, really keep up their good standards and so forth. So I was welcomed. And
yes, that's wonderful.
And I was given free rein to do pretty much. You know, they had great trust that I knew what I was doing.
Oh, I'm sure it was well placed. Yes.
So,
that's great.
So I had a very nice time.
Were there opportunities for you to be sort of creative in your development of various programs? And
Well, the course content, you know, is defined
yes.
in terms of what you have to cover in all those years and so forth. It's you know, it's based on 3 years of chemistry and
right,
a couple of
right.
3 years of biology.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of courses in nutrition and food science. So,
right.
you know, I knew the courses. I mean, I had you know, done them myself.
Yes.
And I had done them at the graduate level. I had done, you know, things. So I knew pretty much what I needed to do.
And what would have been the student population at the Mount, approximately?
Oh,
you know?
I would say maybe about 100.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Okay, so a very, very small student body.
Oh, yes.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now I remember the fire of the mother house.
Mm-hmm.
Was that prior to 1951?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
I think it was in February of 51.
Was it? Okay. And you arrived
and
in September.
We went in September. Everestus was under construction at the time.
Right. And then the most recent mother house that has been torn
down.
Down.
Yeah.
That they would have started building
on
that.
Oh, that was much, much later.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems
yeah.
like it was here and gone in
yeah,
a flash,
that's right.
doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so then you left in 56
mm-hmm.
and
went back in 66.
Went back in 66. And so what were some of the more significant changes that you saw when you returned in 66?
Well, of course, the student population had grown,
yeah.
diversified.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you have to understand is that the university is made up of really three distinct groups.
Yes.
You know, there's the faculty and the administration, there's the board, and then there's the students.
Yes, yes.
And the students at that time were beginning to understand that they had a voice.
Right, yes.
And a significant voice.
Yes.
In what they were being taught and the running of the university. And for the people who come in from on the boards, they come from the business world,
right?
So many of them,
yes.
And they're used to a structure, an authoritative structure,
yes,
you know.
Yes, yes.
And they're not used to their employees telling them
no. what to do. That's
what
right.
to do. And they weren't used to having faculty either. On you know I. can remember one bank manager who didn't understand at all why you'd have a faculty member on the finance committee. I mean, after all, we're discussing salary. So it took a bit of learning on everybody's part to get the roles
sure,
straightened out.
Sure, that's right.
And to understand that this is a cooperative venture.
That's right. Well, so, and I suppose this would have been true, I mean, the notion of student dissent or protest.
Oh,
or,
yes,
well,
see,
that
was coming out of the United States,
right.
see, and,
yes.
and And at the Mount, especially where it was largely run by a religious congregation, they didn't have to really answer to anybody.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, they ran it, they successfully, according to their ways, for many years. So it wasn't easy for them to have a board of outsiders coming in, and wasn't easy for them to have faculty associations or any of that. And it wasn't easy for the faculty actually to even consider like those union faculty union. I mean, even the faculty wouldn't have had a background in unions and those associations regarding salaries and all that.
That would have been all been very new.
It was very new. So, the faculty association really wanted to establish norms for the definition of what an assistant professor was, an associate professor, a full professor, all that, and all the terms for employment and tenure and so forth, and teaching loads. Well, I mean, this was all very new.
I think St. Mary's actually was the first university in the country to develop a faculty union.
Were they?
Yes.
Okay.
And thankfully now to date, one of
Mm.
the only without a
Right.
strike.
Yes.
So,
Oh,
but
you, yes. We actually had a strike.
did you? What year was that? Do you remember approximately? That have been.
68, I
Oh,
guess.
okay.
67, 68, around that, I think.
Okay.
I think I have the
Yes.
exact dates upstairs if you want them.
Well, I think that's okay. But you would have been an association, I guess. Would you have been? Not a union? Yeah.
Yes,
You're
called the
right.
faculty. Yes,
Association.
yeah. But some of us, also were members of professions. So we had to consider what our status was in the different association,
Of course, very complex,
It was
wasn't it?
very complex, yes.
Now, what would you have noticed would have been some of the striking differences, say, in student body, or you said that they were more diversified when you returned in 66. What about the numbers? Had that
Oh, that
grown?
increased too. Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. And the campus had grown. There were new buildings and things.
So it was, and how about in terms of other faculty? Were
Oh, there were lots of new faculty, men and women, and a lot of lay faculty.
Wow, so quite a change from when, only 14 years, 15 years later, you
Well, it's
returned and.
actually 10, yes, 10 years really, from
Ten,
when
well,
I
that's
left.
right, from when you left,
But there
yes.
were people who had come in those early 50s too, in the sciences. We had people teaching chemistry, and in fact, one professor from St. Mary's came to teach chemistry. And we had a gentleman, a doctor, Van Ginkel, who taught classics, and so he was there. Mrs. Yosemiani, who was in the English department. So they gradually were adding more and more.
And I can't remember myself, I should know, but the president of the university at the time, around 66,
We're all sisters.
they're all sisters. Who was, which sister was that? Do you remember?
Probably was Sister. Well, I'm just thinking.
I think
Sister,
that's
I think that would probably be Sister Catherine.
Wallace?
Yeah.
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 I think you're right. That's
Yeah.
right. Because when I
Yeah.
think back to what
Yeah.
I've read at
Yeah.
the time of great change and.
I think it was Sister Catherine Wallace.
Now, part of my interest, of course, is the St. Mary's decision to go co-educational. And at the time, the local paper, as well as research in both the Mounts paper, is it the Picaro?
Pickerel.
Picaro, okay, Picaro and the St. Mary's Journal, there would have been lots of stuff going back and forth about co-education. And what would have been your experience or perceptions of that time?
Well, I was a member of the Senate, and I sat on the board at the time. And a bit of uneasiness, I would think, about how it would work. And
you mean an amalgamation at first of the two universities?
Yes,
right,
yeah,
right.
How that would work out, and whether we actually needed to do it, and
right.
what was to be gained,
yes,
through what was to be lost.
It was a heavy topic.
It was.
So at Senate, you would have been, would you have regularly been, you know, trying to deal with this at the Senate level?
It would have always been a topic, probably more at the board than the Senate, but
okay.
because the Senate is primarily concerned with the curriculum
the
and
academics.
The
yes.
academics. And
yeah.
I mean, it would come up because, of course, there would be the question of whether who's going to teach what.
Right.
you know, if you're going to amalgamate, that means some people give up and some people on both sides.
Right.
And do the students move into St. Mary's to take courses? Do St. Mary's students come out here?
Right.
So, I mean, it personally affected the professors.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. You know?
Of course.
Yeah,
yeah.
So certainly it was, you know, and I just think there was, you know, as I say, it was taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I think relief when they decided to stay independent of one another.
Mm-hmm. And was there a concern about losing then female students once St. Mary's went co-educational?
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
they figured, well, if you live in town and maybe you'll decide not to make the trip out to the Mount. And,
right.
And would the boys come out?
Right. Yes.
Would they come?
Yeah.
They're so used to being handy to her at yeah. school. You know, would they bother? Would they want to come out?
Because it was a fairly short period. St. Mary's would have been officially coeducational in 68.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the Mount was just shortly thereafter, within a couple of years.
Yes.
Would have been.
Because we offered some programs, I think, that some of the boys wanted to take, so
right.
they came.
So
yeah.
they came.
Yeah.
And did what did you notice about that, about the arrival of men on campus?
There was, in the beginning, there weren't that many.
Mm-hmm.
They were largely in the business or the education departments.
Okay.
So I think they were always welcomed.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody tried to make them feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were, you know, really, I think any of them that I talked to, you know, said they were given to understand this was a women's university.
Yes.
And of course, you know, we're going to reflect.
That's right.
Reflect that, so, you know, come with your eyes wide open.
Right, that's right.
And of course, a lot of them liked having all these girls around.
Well, of course, that's right. I would think that that might be a fringe benefit
right,
for them.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, yeah. No. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there was no great disruption or anything.
Now,
probably had to add some washrooms.
Right, that's right. That's
yeah.
And they had to do the same
few
at
practical
St. Mary's.
Things.
Yes, that's right. And the woman I spoke to this morning said the same. You know, we had nowhere to go, so
yeah.
they had to... Those
yeah.
types of amenities, they had
yeah,
to deal with
that's
that.
That's right.
Well, that's interesting. Now, of course, the historiography around all of this as well would be the changes that resulted from Vatican II,
mm-hmm.
and that was impacting,
mm-hmm.
you know, things that were happening at the time. What would be your thoughts around?
Probably was reflected more in the philosophy and religious studies courses, perhaps. I you know.
Okay.
And probably also the sisters who were in the university they changed their habits,
yes,
didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Went
yeah.
to a very modified habit, and,
they did.
You know, shorter habit and so forth. You know, I'm in a science department, so
right.
I'm not paying much attention to
sort of those social type changes. Maybe.
They didn't really penetrate our
right.
department that much,
right.
so not, you know, I think it I think it was welcomed. I don't think, you know, I don't think that the monk was anything but ecumenical in its approach to people who came and who taught there. I mean, there was no, you know. I remember when Mr. Martin, he always tells this story when he was a professor of chemistry, and he said that he came out of his first class and he met me in the hall, and he said to me, "Oh," he said, "the students here are very polite, aren't they?" And I said, "Yes," I said, and he said, "Yes," he said, "in fact, they all stood up when I came in." And I and he was not a Catholic man, and I said, "Well, that was your cue to say the opening prayer." You know? Of course, there were no opening prayers in those days, but probably there were way back in the sisters' classes in the early 50s. You know?
That's priceless.
I don't think the rest of us were quite up to the opening prayers,
That's funny.
now, whether they stood up for that or not, I don't know.
That's a good guess.
He always tells me that's what I said to
And of course, the Mount would have been ahead of St. Mary's in having a non-Catholic president. I can't remember who the first was at the Mount, but I know it preceded St. Mary's. St. Mary's would not have had, in fact, our current president is the first
No.
non-Catholic.
Oh, the first non-Catholic.
Yes.
Oh, Margaret Fulton
Yes.
was the first non-Catholic, I
Yes, I think
think.
she was.
Yeah,
Right.
yeah,
So, I
yeah,
mean, that was
yeah.
ages ahead of St.
That's
Mary's.
right.
You're
Yes.
right.
Yeah.
That does make one wonder about the ecumenical, as you said, the ecumenical nature of education at the Mount.
Well, I think because we had so many professors who were not Catholic,
Right.
they came to everything that was going on. I mean, they came to the baccalaureate mass. They, you know, they appreciated, they spoke highly of the tradition of the sisters, and you know, they certainly bought into our notion that women deserve to be given a good
Yes.
education, prepared for a life of their choice, whether it's in the home or out of the home. I
Yes.
mean, they did. You know, many of them chose to come to the Mount because they liked the atmosphere. They,
Right.
yeah.
The single gender education
Yeah, they liked
approach.
they and
Yeah.
they and I think they just liked the idea of having good students too. Yeah.
Now, yourself, having gone to a coeducational university or universities with
Right.
Montreal and
Yeah.
Saint-Évêques, how then did working at the Mount maybe impact your perception of the benefit of having an all-female institution? And did you become sort of a convert to see that that would be?
I don't, I'm just trying to think now. I saw benefits in I suppose in a way that the girls were very free to speak their minds. It's just like you get a group of women together and they'll talk.
Sure,
They
yes.
talk less freely in a mixed company than they,
That's right.
you know. And probably the clever girls didn't mind being clever and smart and
Right.
taking over and doing things. I don't, you know.
Fewer distractions, maybe as well, and
Well, maybe that.
yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So it was obviously, you know, something that you felt you supported
No,
in
yeah,
your
I didn't
own.
see it. I mean, I had gone to all girls' schools.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I didn't.
Yes.
I thought they were fine. I mean, I didn't have any problem
Yes.
with them. So.
Is there anything else that stands out to you in terms of that time in the late mid to late 60s? Anything else that you can think of?
think it was just the adjustments.
Right.
It was just the adjustments to, and probably for the sisters, they had the most difficult mm-hmm. adjustment to make.
As part of my research, I've read, you know, the various challenges that Catherine Wallace had. Would have been students, Mount students, wanting what they would have seen St. Mary's students had. So they wanted a salad bar at the Mount. If St. Mary's had a salad bar.
Okay.
Or they wanted to be able to stay out later because the St. Mary's students got to.
Yeah.
So I think that there would have been some of that challenge for the leadership at the Mount in trying to remain competitive and not lose students.
That's true.
Right.
Yes, there certainly, I think there was always that feeling that we are outside, like Dow, King, St. Mary's, they're all in the city.
Yes.
And even though it is a little short run,
it,
in those days that was, it was looked longer than it
right,
is
it
now.
Right, it would have been a big trek, really, that's right.
You know, you
didn't have a
bus.
You
can't walk out there.
No, right.
You know.
Yeah.
Did you talk to Ann Derrick at all?
No, but she would be a great
candidate,
wouldn't she?
She was a wonderful...
She was very outspoken, I've read.
Oh, she was a wonderful student leader. And I think she opened the eyes of a lot of people. Yeah. And Derrick was good. I remember because she was on Senate with us.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
I think I've read of various sit-ins and things that she that she initiated.
Oh yeah, she was you know, but she was right, you know.
Yes.
She knew her ground and she knew what she wanted and I think in a way it was good to have somebody like Anne.
Yes.
Because she had a strong voice and you know.
And look where she is today.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, what a wonderful advocate for.
Yes, for women and everything.
That's right.
Yeah, for justice.
Human rights
and
justice.
And she was a real advocate for justice and student rights.
In those days as well. That's right. I had read about her.
Yeah.
And she would have been featured in the student newspaper.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, you really, as I say, probably the most difficult ones were the sisters. Because the sisters were used to... you know, their whole life was you obey whatever the mother general or whatever, leader. You, in those days, they didn't question things so much.
No.
And I think they probably, in the early days of the Mount, I don't imagine the students questioned things too much about their daily life, you know. So... So I suppose for them to have these young students questioning everything, it probably was, you know, they were used to, well, if this is the rule, you obey the rule.
Right,
Well, you know, then you have to ask yourself, well, is that rule right?
That's right.
Now, probably they were helped, to go back to your other question, helped by the Vatican, because that was a... whole series of questioning.
Yes. So it was a time of questioning. I mean,
But the fact that there were questions in the church probably made it easier for the sisters and the, you know, everybody else to ask questions.
Right. It was kind of a healthy exercise.
It was, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
What would be some of your recollections of Frances d'Assisi?
She was severe.
I ask that because she featured prominently in the negotiations with St. Mary's.
Oh, did she?
So the early ones, really, the ones in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So the Mount had actually purchased at one point property at St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
I think you would have not been there.
No,
at that
I wasn't
time.
There, no.
So
no.
She would have been deeply
involved in those
negotiations. Yeah. And of course they didn't. They didn't end. Then Catherine Wallace took over.
Yeah. See, she was the academic dean at the time.
Frances
was. Frances d'Assisi was. So she would have had the control of all. She would have been involved because she would have been the one that would be involved with all the courses and programs. And I mean, that would, that would be her area. I could see why she'd be involved.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. She was forceful.
Was she?
Yes.
Yes. And her sort of severe in her approach. Yeah. I suppose trying to negotiate with the Jesuits at that time would have been, that might have
Oh,
helped her. Who knows?
Well, you had two strong personalities because you had Father, I'm trying to think of his name now, as president of St. Mary's.
Wasn't Lebel. Lebel was
No,
involved
the
with
man before him, I think, wasn't it?
Fisher? No.
No,
Oh, not McNally.
well,
Maybe.
maybe it was
I think
Lavelle.
McNally would have been, well, he was the McNally building, so he was there in the early 50s. And I believe he was the one who turned down the final
Was
offer,
it?
yeah,
Okay.
with Francis d'Assisi, but maybe it was Lebel.
I
Yeah.
can't remember,
Yeah.
but I think you had two strong
Yes.
personalities, you know.
And I've looked at some of the correspondence at that
Yeah.
time, and it was Yeah.
Yeah, I had the feeling that, you know, I think some of the professors probably could see a lot of merit in that they'd have a collaborator
Right.
to work with, you
Yes.
know. That, you know, that for me in my department, there was no similar department at St. Mary's.
Right.
So I was totally protected. I didn't have to worry about it.
No.
My students were going to come regardless.
And really, your department would have reflected, I think, part of the strive for maintaining that independence because it was so unique.
Yeah,
Would that not have
exactly.
been correct? Yeah,
Sure. Yeah,
yeah.
yeah, yeah.
So when you're specialized like
Yeah,
that,
we were specialized. So
yes.
I mean, I can see why it wasn't taken so seriously by me. As far as in the English department, I might have had a different perspective. But,
Fascinating, way to think about it. That's right.
yeah, see, I was totally protected.
Yes,
The
yeah.
only We were the only ones in the city.
Yeah.
Even Dal wasn't going to take me over.
And based on my research, I read that the affiliation between the Mount and Dal was interesting as well. That,
Yes, yeah.
in fact, Francis d'Assisi had graduated vis-a-vis taking courses at Dal in the
Oh,
30s.
many of the sisters did.
Right.
They took courses that their degrees are from Dale.
Yeah.
Yes, their first degrees. Yeah.
So
There
that.
was an early affiliation,
Yes.
yes. And in fact, even right up until to the present time, there's always been an opportunity for some of the senior science students to take senior level courses at
At
Dal.
Dal.
I mean,
Yeah.
there is that transfer of things, you
Yes.
know. Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Because the natural affiliation you would think would have been St. Mary's, but
Yes,
really it was Dal
it was
who
Dale.
all along.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wondered, in fact, as I read through Francis d'Assisi's.
Probably because the probably they went to Dale because St. Mary's was totally masculine.
Right, that's right.
There were no women there.
Yes.
As Dale, there were always women.
That's right,
Yeah,
that's right.
yeah. I think the problem with affiliations is that the professors never want to be in the position where they lose their senior students.
Of course,
You don't
of
want to have
course.
to teach first and second years only,
Right,
and then
right.
the upper levels go off someplace,
Yes,
because
yeah.
you never then have an opportunity to teach the research in your
Yes.
or so forth. So they always professors have to, when you're talking about amalgamation, you have to want to be sure that
That you hold on to your more senior students,
that's
that's
right.
right.
Yeah.
Your graduate students and.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because they're, that's where the challenge is in teaching,
Exactly.
at one level. Yeah. So.
Absolutely. Now, your own, on another note, were there any specific areas of research that you yourself were quite engaged in?
I ran a program in the Dominican Republic. I had money from CETA to build a nutrition education and recuperation center. So we, with another faculty member, Sister Catherine McGough, we introduced a program there to rescue children under the age of 5
Wow.
who were dying from malnutrition.
Yes. You must have been very proud of that.
Oh, I was there back last year just to see
Were you?
Her final time.
Wow.
Yeah.
And still running and
going?
Oh,
it's just been wonderful.
Oh,
it's
that's
been
fabulous.
Wonderful.
They must have been delighted to see you there,
yeah, it's
founder
much.
Of the program. And
yeah.
That's
so,
wonderful.
Yeah. It was a very successful program. When we first went there, and we were in a poor, poor area of the country.
Yeah.
I would say 50% of the children didn't live beyond their 5th birthday. They were, you know, they had all the nutritional, malnutrition diseases you could think of.
Wow.
And so I had money to take two students, two graduates with me,
mm-hmm.
and they stayed for 2 years and they set up the program and we brought in the mothers of the children.
Wow. Wow.
And we taught them, you know, what to do.
Yes.
Like the basic diet in the Dominican Republic is rice and beans,
okay.
I mean, which it is in a lot of countries.
Mm-hmm.
But children who are being weaned
mm-hmm.
cannot take beans as they're served to adults.
Right, okay.
So we showed them how to cook the beans separately. Put them through a sieve so
yes.
they turn out to be like a gravy.
Right.
Poured
yes.
over the rice. You have a complete protein meal.
Right.
And it doesn't interfere with their culture.
Wow. So just a different approach of cooking. And
that's all.
Wow.
We told them that, you know, you could use green leaves, squash leaves, radish leaves, cook them the same way you cook spinach, put them through a sieve, put them over the rice, and you have another protein meal.
Isn't that brilliant?
And we just taught them, you know, to put little shoes on their feet and
yeah.
panties on them so
yes.
that they wouldn't be sitting in the dirt
yes,
bare naked.
Yes, of course. Yeah, of course. Oh, just these small basics, though.
Yeah. Oh, totally basic things.
Wow. Now, with the Sisters of Charity have always had an international outreach.
Well, this
component.
Sister Catherine McGowan was a Sister of Charity.
Right. Okay.
She and another sister had gone to the Dominican Republic in the late 60s. At the request of the Dominican government,
okay,
they decided to stay on when the job with the government was finished. So Sister Catherine, who was a nutritionist, knew all of these families and children. So of course the idea of having money to build a center was wonderful.
Isn't that wonderful?
And
yes.
people to get us started. And we've always had wonderful cooperation, like the doctors would come and give us time free of charge and
yes.
things like that to help, to test the health of the people. And when there would be hurricanes and so forth, our women were often put in charge of the distribution of the food because they
right.
had a system.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
They had a system.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and the interesting thing is when I did my first 5-year follow-up, we brought in all the families and all the children, and in those families that where children had been born after they had
yes.
mothers had been in the center,
yeah.
none of them were malnourished.
Wow. So you have wonderful data
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Support that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful? So who did you go with when you went back last year?
Angela went with me
oh,
because
lovely.
Angela went the first time we went down. The first time we went down, I took my husband and Angela and her younger brother because I had so much equipment to take.
Yes,
and
yes.
that I needed carriers.
You know. Literally.
So I took Angela back with me, and well, she just couldn't believe what. The difference that she saw in the place.
Wow.
And yeah.
And so what year was it that you first started up?
78, I think.
Okay,
yeah,
wow. What a wonderful.
Yeah, it's really,
initiative.
They have the center that we built first is now a medical center. We
wow.
have a doctor's office, one of our own people who's went to medical school, came back to work with us. We have a dentist's office. We have pharmacy, We always had a pharmacy, and then we have a bigger center for the children. We always taught them how to garden,
okay,
so they could grow the green leaves and things.
Yes.
And we got the Mount Dr. Canning, who was head of child study. She had money from CETA to put in a program for early child development.
Okay.
Because our children really weren't prepared to even go to school.
No, no.
They never had a pencil, they never had a crayon, they never had a piece of paper and things.
No.
So that whole center, we now have 3 teachers there.
Wow. Well, you just must have been just overwhelmed with pride.
And this year, the teachers are actually getting paid by the government.
Wow, even better. Isn't that great?
Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah, so that was really a good thing. So I suppose I was really interested in nutrition education.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, and you did a wonderful job.
Well, we did some interesting things locally too.
Yes.
You know,
even today, my work over at Oxford School, they've now got an initiative going, a healthy eating initiative,
yeah,
where tomorrow is banana day.
Yeah.
And every child will get bananas. And
oh, good.
So they're trying to bring in a different fruit,
mm-hmm,
or a healthy
something
snack every day.
Yeah.
So important. And they run a breakfast program,
yes,
of course.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. It's taken us about 50 years to tell that. People to realize nutrition's important.
That's right. You just must shake your head. And then we see the problems with obesity and society and, right. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention?
No, I don't can't think of anything.
Okay. Well, that's great. I'll end our talk now. It's it's 3:15. So that's great. Thank you very much.